Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. The toll-free number, which only works in the U.S., is 877-876-5227. Otherwise, you can ring area code 530-876-3222. And also, I invite you to look at my website, towardthelight.org, which is really info-rich, and I'm sure that you will quite enjoy it. Well, this week we do have a wonderful guest who is coming back to our program. She was my first guest when I started the show back in March. I'm very pleased to welcome back PMH Atwater. Hello!
Hi there!
How are you this evening?
Well, I'm here in Charlottesville, Virginia, listening to you and enjoying a good show.
Well, that's wonderful. It's so nice to have you with us. And I know this evening when I was doing some more research and studying on your website, all the information that you've got that corresponds with your book that we're going to continue to talk more about this evening, Beyond the Indigo Children, the New Children, and the Coming of the Fifth World. Goodness me, we could talk and natter for about 6 hours and probably still not cover everything.
Well, we probably wouldn't even mention the same thing twice.
It's very, very true.
So all we can do is skim it.
Oh, right. Well, there's so many interesting things that I was reading about, and maybe we should start by letting you share with the audience about this information that you've got on your website, and then I'm going to kind of pick your brain about all of this, because there's some interesting notes I've taken here, and I would love to ask you about that. But you've added information that corresponds with your book, and our listeners can access that by going to your website of pmhatwater.com, and then where from there?
Well, on my website is what I call Beyond the Indigo Children Extras. And that's the addendum to the book. In the extras, and it's a free download, extras. In that section on my website is that material which constantly updates the book, the latest scientific findings, the latest reports that we have from our educational system, the latest suggestions, books, ideas that might help better acquaint people with the new children, but more than that, help them to raise them, to be better parents, to help the kids themselves, to help the educators, the employers, you know, the healthcare providers, and so forth. And when I'm talking about the new kids, I'm talking about today's children, literally. Because they're all new. This whole new generation is global. It's not just in the United States. It's worldwide. This whole new generation that we have is unlike any other generation of record. We've got some statisticians that do generational research who say, well, they're a combination of the G.I. Joes, that incredible generation that we had that fought World War II and built our country, and the boomers, and we all know about the baby boom generation. So they're called the echo boomers, meaning that they're a combination of these two traits, but they're really not. Some people call them the millennials. Some people call them Generation Y. Some people call them the indigos. Some people call them crystals. Some people call them star seeds. There's all kinds of labels being applied to our children today. And none of the labels as they are given really cover these children. They're certainly not indigos. They're certainly not crystals. They're certainly not star seeds. They're certainly not Generation Y or any of these other names. They are so different. They are so new that even though they might seem like something, you really can't categorize them.
I know, and all the titles and labels is quite wearisome, I would think.
Well, it's misleading.
Yeah.
It's, in some cases, just plain false. So what I try to do in my book, Beyond the Indigo Children, is to invite people to get beyond labels. Because all labels do is box children into elitist categories. And you know, that doesn't serve anybody.
No,
doesn't
indeed.
Serve the kids. Doesn't serve anybody.
Well, that's thought by, you mentioned something here that is in the notes that I've taken. Actually, at the beginning of the extras, where you're talking about the brain-building gene mutations. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
well, first of all, let's put this into perspective. When we're talking about the new kids or today's children, because almost all of them are the new kids, you know, again, they're unlike any other generation of record. That's why I call them the new kids instead of using these kind of elitist labels. So I'm inviting people to get beyond that. Where they shine, they have unusual intelligence even to the point of genius. And when we're talking about that particular trait, they have many others, but that one particular one, intelligence. My dear Juliet, I don't care if these kids are flunking in school and can't spell. They are the most intelligent generation we've ever had. These kids are smart. They're really smart. And if we look at the gene mutations, and it's certainly appropriate to do that, then we need to recognize these mutations are not new. What's new is that they're accelerating in the population at unprecedented rates. What our geneticists and the people who in science who do this kind of research tell us is that 70% of the world's population now has one, at least one, of these gene mutations that literally build a better brain. In other words, you know, help us to be more intelligent. So that 70% of the world's population that has at least one of them. 30% have both of them. And that's where we get these geniuses, these incredible geniuses. So stop and think. 30% of the world's population has at least, well, 70% has at least one, 30% has two. Now that corresponds, that 30% corresponds almost exactly with what we're finding out from IQ tests. About 5 years ago. Maybe 6 years ago, in the reports that were given from all those countries across the world that administer standard IQ tests, they are finding that 30%, same figure, of the kids who take these tests are now registering are giving scores between 150 to 160. Now, if you talk to school teachers, they'll say, well, you know, the score for genius is 134 to 136. And other teachers say, oh, no, it's 140. These are kids, 30%, you know, are scoring between 150 to 160. It's just phenomenal. These kids are scoring higher than the geniuses of yesteryear. Now, if you look at my
age too,
yeah, and if you look at my research of children who had near-death experiences, and my research base was from birth to the age of 15 years, 277 kids or child experiencers. 48% of those, after their experience was over and they were able, you know, to take the standard IQ test, 48% of those were scoring between 150 to 160.
Now, didn't you write somewhere that there were some people were scoring up to 180?
Well, I found several clusters of kids in my research of child experiencers of near-death states. And one of those clusters was between the ages of 3 and not quite 6 years of age. So, you know, that was a particular cluster where I found lots and lots of cases. And another cluster was between birth and the age of 15 months. And yes, babies can have near-death experience.
Oh,
and when they're old enough to be verbal, tell their parents about it, and it matches the adult experience in the sense of what happens to them and the after effects. So if I look at the, and with that particular cluster between birth and 15 months, especially if they had a black light experience instead of a white light experience, because the different lights that experiencers have.
And let's talk about that just a little bit, too, because you make a very important point, which I do want to share with our listeners, that black light and dark light does not constitute negativity.
No, by no means. The black light or the dark light experience is described as something very warm and very loving. And one of the things we find connected with people, adults or children who have these kind of experiences is that they have unusual jumps in intelligence afterward. There's something about the black or dark light experience that is very healing. It is very soothing and seems to be connected, for whatever reason we don't know yet, to unusual jumps in intelligence afterward. So if I just look at those kids from not quite 6 years of age to birth, then 81% have this jump to 150 to 160, you know, in the standard IQ test. But just those wee little ones, if I just look at those, just focus on those, almost all of those had this big jump in intelligence. And there the scores began at about 182 and into the 200s. So that's where you just get this phenomenal jump in intelligence. But, you know, if we want to cast that aside and just stick with the general population, those kids being born today, we're still faced with this kind of wow kind of thing, like, whoa, what's happening to today's children? And, you know, it's just unbelievable.
Well, something that you make note of here, which I think constitutes such an important part of intelligence, is creative problem solving.
Yeah, that's your abstracting.
Yeah.
You know, let's get past thinking outside the box. These kids don't even recognize that there was ever a box there to begin with.
Yay.
Yeah, I mean, they're abstracting from the time they're verbal. Let me give you an example, because maybe all of your audience doesn't recognize what I mean by abstracting. These are your creative problem solvers. They're creative problem solvers because they don't recognize limits. Let me give you an example. 2.5-year-old Michaela, her mother was talking to her one day, and she was talking about a particular subject, and Michaela put her hands on her hips, marched up to her mother, wiggled her finger in front of her mother's nose, and said, "I don't know the word for that yet." Now, how does a 2.5-year-old know that they don't know the word for that yet in a conversation?
Wow. That is really interesting, and I'm not surprised.
This is what the kids are doing. They're stretching their parents, they're stretching their school teachers, they're stretching anybody and everybody who's around them, not only because they seem to be able to see through everything, but because they're irreverent, they're very good at math, they're creative intuitives, they have just incredible intuitive abilities, they're natural-born entrepreneurs, they're psychic, they're multi-sensory since birth, they're multi-sensory and they live in a multiverse. Not a universe, a multiverse.
Very good word. Now, this reminds me of something that happened recently, actually last month when I had my FOI meeting, Friends of Irons meeting. A mother brought her 14-year-old daughter here to Nashville, all the way from Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And her dear 14-year-old daughter, Amber, was a little bit uncomfortable and awkward, not with me, but in general, because she's a natural medium, and she pretty much all of her life has been able to see or feel people on the other side, including people that had inhabited the house they used to live in. I can't remember all the details of the different testimonies that she was sharing with me, but I looked straight at her and I said, "My dear, you are totally normal. There is nothing whatever wrong with you. This is very natural, especially with children your age." Now, again, she's 14 years old, so she would really kind of fall into this category.
Yes, she's one of the new kids. Absolutely. They started flooding in about 1982. They had been entering the earth plane, oh, I think since about the mid-1800s. Mm-hmm. So we've been dealing with them for a while, but not in the numbers we're getting now.
I mean, this is more like an avalanche of these.
Absolutely an avalanche. Absolutely.
And what really made me so happy was that her mom was very, very supportive of her and brought her to me. And then I was able to ease her mind, and I just said, "You keep up the good work. There's nothing to be afraid of. You're just doing something totally natural. And pay attention, honor your intuition, honor your experiences." Well, she just gave me the biggest hug.
I can imagine.
And gratitude. And I really wanted you to address this a bit, too, because I've been encountering some more kids that are just naturally doing this. And it's so neat they can come to a woman in her 60s who says, "Well, that's way cool. Just keep it up," you know. And they're very, very insightful. And just like you said, they also do not tolerate any kind of phoniness or limitations or hype. And
that's just plain anger, dear. And let's face it, the new kids are angry. In fact, the negative part of their energy signature, the signature for the generation, the positive part is they're incredibly tolerant. The negative part is their anger. And this is a peculiar kind of anger. It isn't rage, at least I wouldn't call it that.
No, there is a distinct difference between anger.
Absolutely. And it's an anger or a frustration or an impatience with anything that is overly exaggerated or inauthentic. You know, they don't like anything that's not authentic. If it is, they'll leave or ignore it or fight against it or in some way just snub up their nose at it. They don't want anything to do with that stuff.
And I also like the way that in your book you're talking about be creative with that anger. Do something with it. Be productive with it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, some people say, "Well, the new children are going to save us." And I say to them, "Well, maybe." And the people will say, "Well, why are you saying that? You know, obviously, they're very knowing, they're very intuitive, they're natural-born healers, they're natural-born entrepreneurs. These you know, these are such intelligent children. Of course they're going to save us. And I said, only if we can teach them how to handle their anger. If we can teach them how to do that, then yes, with their incredible abstracting and ability to see through problems, yes, they're going to teach all of us a lot. They're going to help our governments and our nations in incredible ways. But if we can't, show them what to do with that anger, if we can't help them to redirect their anger in constructive ways, then we're going to wind up in wars and devastating environments like nothing we've ever seen. Just stop for a minute, Juliet. In all of the Arabic countries, over half of their population, in each one of them, over half of their population is under the age of 25.
Wow.
So these are the new kids. What are they being trained to do?
Exactly.
You know, someone who is subject to anger is very easy to manipulate.
Good
so
point,
think
there.
About that.
Yes. And they could also be led to...
They can be led to completely redo the infrastructure of their society, their various societies, in very constructive and positive ways that would work in their culture. They don't have to change their culture that much to be able to work in infrastructure changes, educational changes, environmental changes that would be of immense benefit to their countries. Instead of being taught that killing is good.
Exactly. And one thing that I would like to address, too, is the process by which the educational systems have been running. And one thing that I want to add from my own experience, even though I'm not a new kid.
Well, maybe you are. Remember,
well,
they start coming in the middle 1800s.
I've been totally... outside of the box, I've had the audacity to think for myself and don't try to box me in because I'll just fail. But the interesting thing, too, is that I've always needed an outlet to be creative.
Uh-huh.
And I know that a lot of educational systems, and especially in more recent years, they've been doing away with creative courses in the curriculum, just making everything flat, linear, left brain sort of stiff, and if these kids are not going to be granted a platform through which they can be creative, because that is also a way through which we can assimilate data and also a way to be creative and to funnel that anger into something positive. You see what I'm getting
mm-hmm.
at here?
We need music, we need painting, we need dance, we need all kinds of creative endeavors, but we also need creative and new ways to handle science.
Exactly.
And to handle engineering. You know, in the whole field of life, we need more creativity. And these kids are just made to order for it.
I think they are too, and I do think that they're going to demand it if they haven't started doing so already, because I've been seeing some amazing things coming from just the kids that I've met.
Well, let's talk just a little bit about education since we're there. and let's recognize, first of all, that that the school systems that we have in the United States, almost all of them, are based on verbal learning. In other words, the curriculums are based on verbal learning. 80% of the curriculums in the United States that are used in the schools here are verbal. these kids are spatial. Clearly, 80% of the new kids are spatial. Yet 80% of the curriculum in the schools is verbal. So we're losing our kids.
Yeah,
they're bored.
Same reason.
You know, they're bored. They're frustrated. They don't know how to handle the school curriculums. Conversely, the teachers are just as confused because they don't know how to handle the kids. So it's a catch-22. So, you know, I have a whole chapter in the book, Beyond the Indigo Children, about education. Give samples, ideas, examples. And, of course, in the addendum to the book, which is on my website, it's just myname.com, pmhatwater.com, I give even more examples. But, you know, there's one very sobering report. I think it was given in March of this year or revealed in March of this year. It was done in England, by the way, but we're now finding that that's true everywhere. And what they're finding, and this is really sobering, what they're finding is that by the time the kids reach puberty, so I'm going to say about the age of 14, 50% of them have lost the ability to abstract. Now, if I were to name the most important talent that they have, I would say the ability to abstract. And if 50% of them, at least in this particular study, are losing the ability to abstract by the age of 14, let's take a look at that. And that's exactly what these people did. Who did this study, they took a very good look at this figure and saying, why? You know, why? And they were able to pinpoint exactly why. It's virtual reality.
I was just thinking, yeah.
Virtual realities. Oh. So you're talking cell phones, you're talking videos, you're talking Game Boys, you're talking computers, you're
what
talking
is a Game
TV.
Boy?
All of that. They're not bad, they're not wrong, it's just that we're abusing them. Virtual realities directly interfere with brain development in children. So if we could limit their use, then that would be okay. But we're allowing our children to have too much of it. And you know what happened last month? Disney revealed their latest channel, and it's for babies. Babies only.
That's
a TV channel for babies.
Oh, my goodness me.
So, you know, here we have this finding that shows that too much of virtual realities interferes with brain development in children, and Disney's coming out with a channel for babies, you know, and you just sort of scratch your head and wonder, well, where's the responsibility here? And what amazed me the most, Juliet, is that most of the parents were in favor of this. They wanted it.
That's scary.
And I'm saying, doesn't anybody know the research?
Whoa.
Doesn't anybody see what's happening? Doesn't anybody read the reports, you know? So that's why I carried all the references you want, and everything is on my website, so that people can access, this kind of information that is, I would think it would be helpful.
Well, I'm right now looking at your outline about that the brain develops in stages. Each stage is dependent on those which precede it in order to ensure a mature brain. It takes about 25 years.
Yeah, isn't that something? It's not 21 years or 18 years.
Yeah.
It's 25 years.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Before we get a mature brain. That is to say, in most people. There might be some people that's a little questionable, but in most people. By the time you're 25, you're supposedly have a mature brain.
Well, it's very interesting because getting back to this virtual reality thing, and I thought to say I'm so grateful that I never even had television as a child.
Nor did I.
Thank goodness, right? And, you know, I was too busy drawing and painting and playing the piano and singing to the flowers in the garden and being creative, just using my own mind. And to this day, I've never owned a television. And I'm very proud of that fact because I just find it so invasive.
Well, we do have one. I do watch it. I do have specific programs that I watch, mostly news. And then when I'm through watching it, I'm through. I'm gone. I mean, I don't just sit there. But, you know, people are different.
A lot of parents are going to dump their kids onto television in order to not be distracted or bothered or what have you. And this is very, very dangerous.
Well, it's a babysitter, you know.
Mm.
But I'm not going to put it down completely because you can learn a lot from television. And it's an incredible source of information. So that if we use it wisely, then I think we can be helped by it.
Well, everything in moderation.
Right.
And that's what we really need to look at. And also, as you were talking about, teaching the children how to use that anger and turn it into something positive and creative is a really good thing. And likewise, we also need to learn to allow ourselves to be taught by our children. And it really is very much a two-way street that we need to listen to them.
Yeah.
Too. Big time.
Absolutely. Parents need to listen to their kids. You know, the kids have something to say, and we need to listen to them. We need to honor their intelligence and their right to speak. And I wonder sometimes how much of that we do.
It's a good question because even as I've spoken with some of the parents of some of the children that I have encountered recently, I have made it a point to tell them it's very important to listen to your children, especially when they're very young, because they come into this plane bearing lots of very wise information that they've carried with them. And I also encourage them to listen to them when they're talking about their invisible friends. And I think I had mentioned to you one time when I had spoken with a mother who was describing her four-year-old daughter who brought an invisible friend home from the mall, who also happened to be a child. And I started describing the child, and I said, is this how your daughter describes her new friend? And she said, well, yes. And I said, well, she's real. She's on the other side. And your daughter has been able to see her. And I, as a medium, was able to validate the validity of this invisible friend.
Of the new friend, yeah. Yeah, and so many of the new kids attend night school.
Ooh.
You know, they do. They're in night school, and I wasn't clear on what that was until I was with a few of them. And, you know, most parents think that, you know, when your kid's asleep at night, they're just asleep. Well, maybe some of them are, but a lot of them are not. What they're doing at night, many of them, is attending school. It's a real school. They get assignments. They're there with other kids. They study things. They learn things. The assignments often have to be concluded during the daytime. But they love night school. And some people say, well, that's astral school. Not really. It seems to be more of a physical matrix or grid where various kids gather. And so, well, to be very frank with you, I really thought it was just their imagination until I was in a shopping mall. And there was a little boy next to me and his parents, and then there was another little boy down the way, quite a ways down. And the two boys, and with his parents, and the two boys saw each other, and they yelled at each other, and they called each other by name, the correct name, by the way, and they ran to each other, were hugging each other and talking about school the night before and about their teacher and what their teacher had taught them and about their assignments. They were just gibbering away to everybody's surprise, because the little boy who was next to me was local. The other little boy was the son of tourists. I mean, they were just tourists. They were just passing through. Never been there before. Would probably never be in that town again. So how did these boys know each other? How did they recognize each other, call each other by the same name, or excuse me, the correct name? And how could they possibly share the same identical information from a school they claim to have attended the night before?
Well, this is really, really significant, because I was thinking about this web, this telepathic web, and...
Well, it seems to be more of a grip. It seems to be a very physical thing, in the sense that the energy has coalesced enough or is strong enough that it has formed this particular matrix or grid where the kids actually go. I mean, they seem to physically, at least as near as I can tell, go there and have mutual experiences.
It feels like it might be a sort of out-of-body type of thing, perhaps, too.
Well, it's other dimensional, so
yeah,
I don't know if one would call it out-of-body. I kind of hesitate to use that particular phrase, but it certainly is on another dimension.
Yeah, and that's the point I want to make, because I experience this too, and you know, this is so significant because of the fact that there is so much telepathy going on that has been consistent, that has been accurate, even from, you know, like you say, people who have purportedly never met on the physical plane, but they know each other inside out.
Yeah.
And it's real, and it's valid.
Yeah, these little kids do.
And the recognition takes place instantly when they do see each other on the physical plane. And this is a big part of my work, is that I'm always trying to let people know there is so much more to us than you think. We are not confined or identified with a physical body, a physical universe. In fact, the physical stuff is really just a hologram. And it's what these kids and other people like myself, you know, just kind of take off and go places and experience things all the time. I've even written songs from stuff that I gleaned from other dimensions.
Well, just remember, we're multisensory and we live in a multiverse.
I really love that. I like the term multiverse because it is so accurate. And you know, I'm still dealing with a little bit of Bible Belt stuff being in Nashville, Tennessee. And
well, yeah. Let's not limit our kids, and let's not limit their parents, and let's not limit the educators. I think that's what we need to get past, is this idea that we have to be this or we have to be that, or
exactly,
that we fall into this particular category or we fall into that particular category. We don't. God doesn't limit us, so why do we limit ourselves?
Well, that's the question, and that is such a valid question, too, because, of course, being on the other side, we were able to experience that limitless...
Yeah, if you're talking about near-death experiencers, we can certainly talk from a very different plane of existence. But right now, you know, we're talking about the new kids, today's children, and how they differ, and the kind of promise that they bring to all of us, the promise of thinking in different ways and solving the world's problems in different ways. And that thrills me. I'm just so pleased that that Mother Nature, that God, however you want to term that, is giving us the very type of children, either by birth or transformed through experiences like the near-death experience, one way or the other, are giving us the very type of children we need in our very quickly changing times. Mother Nature, always through gene mutations, supplies us with what we need. And as near as I can tell, that's what's happening here.
And something else that I would like to bring up that is very connected to all of this is your reference to Hollands. H-O-L-O-N-S.
Oh, Hollands! Hold on, H-O-L-O-N, yeah. I get to teach everybody a new word. That new word is Hollon, H-O-L-O-N. And the new kids do Hollons. We've all got to do Hollons.
Yes.
What a Hollon is where you get two conflicting points of view, two conflicting sides, two conflicting groups of people, and in other words, people or beings or groups in conflict. And these groups come together and work on mutually beneficial projects for the higher good of all concerned. In other words, you're not going to get people to agree. It's not going to happen. Just forget it. You're not even going to get societies necessarily to accept each other. But what you can do is come up with these projects that will benefit the greater good and get these conflicting groups together to work together to accomplish this, because it helps them all. And if you do that, if you can get conflicting groups together to work together for the mutual benefit, then little by little, these groups of people begin to realize, oh, the other guy isn't so bad. The other way of doing things isn't so bad. You know, where were we all this time that we hated them? So if you come together with the idea of Hollands, and that's, in other words, if you form Hollands, and you can do that through various kinds of projects where different kinds of groups will benefit, certainly conflicting groups can benefit, then the results are miracles. You know, last May, I was in Istanbul in Turkey, and they practice Hollands all the time over there. And I'll tell you, my dear Juliet, I got my spiritual comeuppance in Istanbul. We can all take lessons from these people. What I found is that fundamentalist Muslims live next door to fundamentalist Christians, who live next door to fundamentalist Jews, who live next door to fundamentalist Buddhists and pagans and all kinds of people. They respect each other. They tolerate each other. They get along with each other. Yes, you have radicals over there, but not that many. They live by law because it's a republic, just like the United States is a republic. And they have these Hollands projects. One of them was the Bosphorus Straits, the water of the Bosphorus Straits. And all these huge oil tankers, you know, ploy these waters from the Ukraine and Russia and Georgia and all the different countries there through the Dardanelles and into the Mediterranean and so forth. And so you've got the Bosphorus Straits. And the waters were sludge. You know, they were the color of sludge, and they were the consistency of sludge. And some people got together and had a vision, and their vision was that they could make the Bosphorus blue again by getting the conflicting groups together to work together for the greater good. So they got all these different groups to work together. And I'll tell you, my dear, when I was there last year, the Bosphorus The waters are just as blue as you can imagine. You can swim in them. You can eat fish out of them. I know because I ate a fish caught that day out of the Bosporus. In fact, just a couple of hours before I ate it. And it was wonderful. And I just kept looking at this water. We even sailed the water. I kept looking at this water and shaking my head and say, if they can do it, why can't we do it?
Indeed. Indeed.
And you do it by forming holons.
I really love that. When I was taking these notes, I just felt this is something that is really special because I don't see why every human being in the world can't do this.
Well, you can. You can. And it's not by changing people.
No,
it's not by
no.
changing cultures. It's by inviting different groups or even conflicting groups to come together on mutual projects that will benefit the higher good. For instance, like the Bosporus Straits. And these conflicting groups, these weird groups, odd groups, all different kinds of groups, all got together, not because they loved each other, but because they wanted to make the Bosporus blue again. And by doing that, by coming together for this project, they then gained more respect for each other. They get along a little bit better. No, it's not a miracle in that sense. They don't love each other necessarily, but at least they tolerate each other and they get along better. So, in that vein, it's a miracle.
And that's a very powerful lesson in that, because we can accomplish so much more if we opt to be peaceful and cooperative rather than warring against one another.
Well, I don't know that they're necessarily peaceful, but at least they get along and they tolerate each other.
Right.
You know, and that to me is the biggest step.
Yes.
You know, if you can just get people past their differences, then healing can occur.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other question, we've just got a few minutes here, and of course,
oh my goodness,
we
you're
could
kidding.
Go on forever, but I want to address something that has really come up a lot, and that is autism and the God connection.
Oh, get that book by William Stillman. Oh, you've got to get that book. I've heard that it might be made into a movie. I hope so. I truly hope so. You know, when we're looking at the new kids, we have to look at what they face. 2 out of every 5 have a learning disorder in our country. 1 out of every 10 are mentally ill. Over 7 million have ADD. Cases of ADHD are up 600% since about 1991, 92. Autism spectrum is now so pervasive, it is considered an epidemic. When I talk to these kids, they laugh at me when I talk about these kind of statistics and the kinds of things they face. They laugh at me. They say, we're not disordered. We're reordered.
I like that.
They're reordered.
I wanted to sort of define autism a little bit because I think people are still so clueless as to what it really is. And there are so many children that even though they may not respond externally, there's a wealth of knowledge and wisdom going on inside them.
And it's very difficult to define autism because there's so many different types of it.
Yeah.
It's a broad spectrum. So now today they simply call it autism spectrum because some are highly functional. Not only are they intelligent, but they can talk, read, and write like anybody else and go to school. And many of us are even employed by people who have autism. Some of them do really great things, and others cannot speak, flail around, can't hardly even control their bodies, drool all the time, and, you know, have different types of behaviors that put people off. But the truth is that even those that are more handicapped by autism, really, when you get inside their head, when you get inside their skull, you find out that they really can think. They want desperately to communicate, but they communicate differently.
Yeah.
So one of the things Bill Stillman teaches us is to approach each autistic person with respect and talk to them eyeball to eyeball, just like you do to anybody else. Don't look past them. Look right at them when you're talking to them. Because they, in their head, in their reality, are just absolutely cheering, because they realize then that you honor them, that you know they exist, that they're a human being, that they really can hear, they really can process thought, but they just can't respond in the way that we're used to people responding. And through various types of ways of communicating with these children, we're finding that, yes, indeed, they are intelligent. Yes, indeed, they do notice when we talk to them, when we look right at them, when we're talking to them, and when we don't. And you know, they're processing thought just like we are. They're abstracting just like hopefully we are.
Exactly.
You know.
That's a very important point to make too, because even though I'm not being autistic because of the fact that I'm legally blind.
You would be more sensitive to this.
Oh boy. And people would
Hello?
Or to a friend instead of talking to me, and I thought,
Hello?
Hello?
I was just going
to
say, oops. Yeah, it is, actually. We need to close down. We have one more show tonight. Yeah, I'm sorry. You're doing such a wonderful show. I hate to cut people off the air, but...
And I was paying attention to the clock.
Oh, not a problem. Okay.
Teammates, we'll have to do this again, as always, because this is just tremendous. It's a wealth of information.
Well, I hope everybody reads the book Beyond the Indigo Children, because there's a lot in it.
Okay, and again, that's pmhatwater.com, and thank you for being with us, and thanks to our listeners, and do remember that only love prevails.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.